1340WNBS.com presents The Neil Bradley Show.
Welcome to the program. Josh Planos, Washington Post contributor, will be my guest. A lot to talk about with Josh. The Olympics going on. We'll get his thoughts on the first few days of activity. He also wrote three articles, one on basketball and Russell Westbrook. Could he be the next MVP? He writes an article about that. Pretty good stuff in there. Really, really enjoyed reading it. Also, Felix Hernandez. I remember whenever this kid was a rookie, I picked him up when I played Strat-O-Matic baseball. He was a really good pitcher for me for years, but I haven't played Strat in several years. So the age starting to pile up on King Felix, and he's not the king anymore in terms of his results on the hill. Josh Planos will kind of break it down in one of his articles. I'll ask him about that. Pretty easy to see why the king is struggling a little bit. And, gosh, it would be really difficult to find someone who didn't know many people who played fantasy football. Well, Josh also is a fantasy player, but he takes a look at four players who sort of disappointed last year. I had one of them. But he believes these four will be back and have big seasons this year. So we're going to try to find out who those are. We'll, of course, have the links posted to all the articles on our website at 1340WNBS.com on the link to this program. But before we get to Josh, some other things to tell you about. Yesterday, the first day in pads for Murray State football. And they also had their first scrimmage of fall camp. Head coach Mitch Stewart's first opportunity to evaluate his team over what they've learned the first 3 days of camp. They'll have a scrimmage on Monday as well. The team is off today. They're actually in Fort Campbell touring the military base, thanking in person members of the United States military for their service to our country. They've already tweeted out some photos of one of the players rappelling and doing some other things there on the Army base. It's turned into a really terrific trip, and it's something that I'm really very proud of Coach Stewart doing that. Just taking a day off. They could have been out working at practice today. Instead, this is very special to me. Also, more awards on the preseason for Katie Humphreys, the Razor quarterback named to the College Sports Madness preseason All-America third team. Last week, Stats.com named him to their third team. So Razors will be back at practice tomorrow. Their next meaningful information will come out of Monday's scrimmage, and by then they'll probably start to see the depth chart take on some meaning as well. And we'll get our next update probably next week from Coach Stewart once that happens. Kentucky football, all the news not good yesterday. Kentucky's Reggie Mint taking some time away from football to deal with a personal issue. Head coach Mark Stoops asking the media to respect Mint's privacy. Didn't offer a timeline for the return of the junior defensive tackle, the 6'4 Florida native playing in 10 games last season with four starts. He logged 31 tackles last year, 1.5 tackles for loss, and a sack. Also, tight end Darryl Long announced he's transferring, the 6'4", 246-pound UK sophomore, hoping for more playing time at another school. ESPN announced the television network designations and start times for the fourth annual Big 12 SEC Challenge presented by Sonic. ESPN will televise all the games in some fashion. 12 participating teams were in the postseason last year, 10 in the NCAA tournament. Locally, here's the ones you want to know about. Kansas will play at Kentucky. That's a 5 p.m. tip Central Time on January 28th. That will air on ESPN. And Steve Prohm, former Racer coach, will bring his Iowa State Cyclones to Nashville to play at Vanderbilt in a 3 p.m. game there on January 28th. Five home matches and a shoulder-to-shoulder with the defending national champions highlight the Murray State Rifle schedule released by head coach Alan Lawler Monday. The defending OVC champions and third-place finishers at last year's NCAA championship will kick off their 2016-17 campaign with a home match against conference rival UT Martin on September 25th, part of family weekend activities. And then the NCAA Rifle Championships will take place March 10th and 11th at Ohio State University in Columbus. North Dakota State will enter the 2016 season as the FCS prohibited favorite again. Having won an NCAA record 5 straight national titles, the Bison earned 152 of 158 first-place votes Monday in the Stats FCS preseason top 25. The Bison followed in the top 5 by Sam Houston State. Jacksonville State picked up 4 first-place votes, their third. Then Richmond and Northern Iowa. Last year, Southland Conference power Sam Houston reached the national semifinals before falling to Jacksonville State. The Gamecocks went on to the title game before losing to North Dakota State. Rounding out the top 10, Chattanooga, Charleston Southern, South Dakota State, William & Mary, and Illinois State. Jacksonville State, the only OVC team that is ranked. All right, last night, time for the full confession. I was watching several innings of the Cardinals game, and then it became evident they weren't going to score. 4-0 going into the ninth. So I went over to watch Olympic coverage and saw some good things. Saw some of the swimming performances and the beach volleyball performance, and I think some men's gymnastics. I actually, the TV was just on. Watched some of it. I could see we weren't doing well just from the body language of the guys. They didn't look too happy with what they were doing. I don't know anything about it, so I wouldn't know one way or the other. But anyway, once I got to bed, I thought, I'll find out if the Cardinals at least managed to score. And lo and behold, they rallied to win. They sure did. 5 runs in the bottom of the ninth. Here's a John Rooney recap. And then on the other side, Josh Planos will join me.
Last night at Busch Stadium, the Cardinals had 3 outs to work with in the bottom of the ninth inning, trailing the Reds 4-0. Tony Cingrani, the closer, was in the game, even though it wasn't a save situation. Yadier Molina led off with a base hit to right field. With 2 outs, Tommy Pham walked. A hit by pitch for Colton Wong. Then Matt Carpenter singled in 2 runs. Stephen Piscotty singled in a run. Matt Holliday walked to load the bases. Exit Cingrani, enter Ross Ohlendorf. Ohlendorf walked Brandon Moss, leading to Yadier Molina.
He wouldn't walk another run, then, would he?
He wouldn't walk him, heck no. And now he pitches. He hit him. He hit him, and the Cardinals win. You believe this one? He hit him. The Cardinals scored 5 runs in the bottom of the ninth. They tie the game on a bases-loaded walk, and Yachty is hit by a pitch, and he gets the game-winning RBI. The Redbirds win 5-4. Look at this scene. Unbelievable. Wow.
The Cardinals won it 5-4 on the air tonight at 6:20 with Mike Leake on the mound. I'm John Rooney.
The Cardinals Hall of Fame weekend presented by Edward Jones is August 26th through 28th when the Cardinals host the Oakland A's. There are great giveaways all weekend long, starting on Friday night when fans will take home a Bob Gibson Hall of Fame red jacket statue courtesy of Scott Credit Union. Saturday, it's the 2016 Cardinals Hall of Fame inductees plaque presented by Edward Jones. And Sunday, fans will receive a replica batting practice hat courtesy of Monsanto. That's the Cards and Athletics, August 26th through 28th. Get your tickets now at cardinals.com/promotions.
Welcome back to the program. Josh Planos is my guest here on this Tuesday. And Josh, with several articles he's written, which we will talk about in a bit. But Josh, the Olympics are underway. The opening ceremonies Friday night have now led to some really fantastic moments. Give me your impressions so far and what's been some of the highlights for you.
Well, I think the swimming pool, first and foremost, has really been just kind of the spark plug of the Olympics thus far. I mean, seeing Katie Ledecky win by that cartoonish margin in the 400-meter freestyle was one of the more impressive things that I've ever seen in sports. I mean, this is the topmost event that the sport offers. You know, this only happens every 4 years. We get the best swimmers all in one pool, and yet, you know, she wins by 5 seconds. And, you know, in a sport that's decided by hundredths of seconds, that's just, you know, it's mind-bending the way that she's kind of, you know, blossomed into, to me, the best swimmer on the planet. And I know that, you know, Michael Phelps will probably have his say, by the end of the Olympics. I know he's going for gold tonight. But really, she's the marquee event, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, she owns, so the event that she won, the 400-meter, you know, that's not even her best event. She owns the 11 fastest times in history in the 800-meter freestyle. And then there's also an event she swims that women aren't allowed to swim at the Olympics. So, you know, it just kind of goes to show that if they were to add that to the equation, just, you know, what she could possibly, showcase another time. To me, she could potentially become the greatest athlete in the U.S. In short time. And, you know, since she won gold in 2012 in London, she hasn't skipped a beat. She's been winning everything. And I just can't wait to see more of, what she accomplishes in Brazil.
Go ahead. My wife and I were watching the event you were speaking of. And at the end of it, I mean, my wife doesn't watch a lot of sports. And she said, she's going to win this by quite a bit. And I said, people don't win events by 5 seconds in the Olympics. It just doesn't happen. You can't win events by 5 seconds, yet we just watched her do it. I said, you don't really realize how amazing what you just saw was. It was incredible.
Exactly. I mean, it'd be like watching the Kentucky Derby and having, you know, a horse win by, you know, 3 lengths. Like, that's, you know, just improbable that someone would be that dominant at such a, you know, a dominant level. Then as far as, you know, what else I've enjoyed, Michael Phelps, I'll probably remember that turn that he had in the relay for the rest of my life. I mean, that's, I don't know a lot about swimming, but I know that when he hit the wall, he was, you know, trailing pretty sizably. And when he, you know, emerged off of the turn, he was suddenly winning and the U.S. was suddenly in prime position. And he's just, you know, he's Aquaman for a reason. So we'll see what, you know, what else he can add to what's already the greatest Olympic career any athlete has ever had. Last night's 100-meter breaststroke final was, you know, ripe for narrative with Lily King taking down the supposed arch-rival Yulia Efimova, who's been found to have doped on at least two different occasions. You know, that was just kind of hopefully a win for clean swimming if King turns out to be clean as everybody would expect. You know, that was incredible. And today we get to see if Simone Biles, you know, can kind of cement her place as the greatest female gymnast ever. And, you know, we're kind of tossing around these greatest, you know, athletes ever labels throughout the Olympics. But the fact of the matter is we just have, you know, some of the most talented women in the world on the U.S. national team with basketball, with swimming, with gymnastics. And, you know, we kind of get to see them all put it on display for the next 2 weeks. And, you know, I think that's pretty exciting.
Well, when you throw those labels out, one thing about Olympics, you have the statistics to back it up. If they're winning by big margins or taking gold medal after gold medal, you certainly have an easy time making a case when you make those statements.
Oh, certainly. I mean, I didn't know that the women's basketball team hadn't lost in an Olympic game since 1992. But when you see them, you know, through two games, they're winning by an average margin of 52.5 points. Kind of just, it seems a little bit more understandable when you put it in those terms. I mean, the way the women have just dominated the Olympics thus far has really been impressive. And to me, they're going to be the reason why the U.S. comes out on top in the medal count.
Let's talk a bit about basketball. You wrote an article over the last week about Russell Westbrook and kind of eye-popping that he could edge out LeBron James and Steph Curry for MVP honors. And in the article, you make a really good case for that. And now part of that is he doesn't really have anyone he must share the ball with now at Oklahoma City, so he's going to be touching it quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, Bovada in Vegas came out with immediate MVP odds after he chose to renegotiate with Oklahoma City, which, you know, gives the Thunder a little bit more security as far as his situation is concerned. But he came out with 4-1 odds, which trailed LeBron and Curry, who were at 15-4. You know, I really thought those odds were a little deceptive, because when we talk about an MVP, we're not talking about a player who's, you know, defensive minded. You know, rarely, I think David Robinson's one of the only examples, if not the only example, of a player winning, you know, defensive MVP and NBA MVP in the same season. So we're really just looking for an offensive juggernaut whose team makes the playoffs, right? You know, we don't give the MVP award to, you know, we would never give it to DeMarcus Cousins.
Sure.
If the Kings, you know, didn't make the playoffs. And I think Westbrook's got enough in the tank to get the Thunder maybe into the 8th seed in the West. And I think that would be more than enough for his candidacy, because, you know, when we look at how much his numbers jump off the page on an ordinary night and then try and, you know, project what those numbers look like without Durant in the fold, you know, someone who needs the ball, who needs to get his shots up, who, you know, frankly deserves to have those shots. I mean, he's one of the 5 best players in the league. I think we could just expect things that we've never seen before from an NBA basketball player in terms of what Westbrook will do next season. I mentioned, you know, how many times he scored 30 points over the past 2 seasons. And I think it's something like 18, and 12 of those 18 times have been without Durant on the court. So clearly he's used to, you know, stepping up his game when he doesn't have his you know, his the marquee shooter of the team on the court with him, and his numbers across the board, with the exception being assists, all spike, and I'll see huge, you know, elevations when Durant's not on the court with him. So I think next year is going to be as much of a one-man band as we've ever seen in the NBA, and, you know, I'm excited to see it because Russell Westbrook puts on a show every night, and now that he has, you know, frankly, you know, not as many options to pass to, I think we're going to see a lot of him just kind of taking over games.
And you mentioned at the end of the article about possibly carrying a triple-double average at the end of the season, and that would be amazing. I mean, I think of our school at Murray State. We've had 80-something years of basketball, and there have been two triple-doubles in the history of our program. This guy might average one next year.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he had, you know, he had 18 last year. One of which, you know, he produced in 17 minutes, which is just mind-boggling. But, yeah, you know, he really is a jack-of-all-trades. I've never seen a point guard crash the glass as hard as he does. I've never seen anybody get out on a fast break as fast as he does. You know, he really does it all. So, you know, while his assist totals might dip a little bit, seeing as he's not passing to, you know, one of the best shooters the game has to offer, you know, he's going to be able to put his team and himself in any situation that he wants. And I think that bodes well for, you know, him to continue producing these ridiculous triple-doubles over the course of next season. And, you know, I can't wait to see. Maybe we have, you know, the first player since Oscar Robertson to average a triple-double over the course of a regular season.
You also wrote an article on Felix Hernandez. Everyone knows him as King Felix, but he is not having the kind of year that King Felix normally has, a dominating 2010 when he won the Cy Young Award. And, I haven't really looked too closely at the statistics, but that article really brought it to light and how much he's lost off his fastball. And I know 91 miles per hour sounds pretty fast, but when you're an elite-level pitcher, it certainly isn't, and therein lies a lot of his problems.
Yeah, I mean, when we think about, you know, 7 miles per hour or 7.5 mile per hour drop off, you know, that doesn't sound like anything because we're not, you know, contextualizing it. But when we think about how important it is to have a dominant fastball in today's, you know, MLB, I think we can kind of understand that, you know, of having a fastball lose 7.5 miles per hour, which is the case for Felix since he entered the league, his fastball is now 91.1 miles per hour. You know, it just kind of seems obvious that his strikeout totals would be, you know, lesser than they were, say, for instance, the year he won the Cy Young in 2010. When you don't have a dominant fastball to fall back on, you know, it becomes increasingly difficult, and you know, the importance of being able to control your pitches is amplified that much more. And he hasn't been able to control his pitches because he's walking people at a career high rate. He's giving up more runs than he's accustomed to. I think he's pretty much on pace to have a career worst season in virtually every metric. You know, we're talking about ERA, we're talking about hit rate, contact rate, strikeout rate. I mean, everything's just kind of going out the window. And what's sad is, you know, for years we've talked about how Felix Hernandez could never get run support because Seattle was never able to have an offense behind him. But this year, you know, Seattle's really kind of come out of the woodwork, and, you know, Robinson Cano is having this breakthrough year, and, you know, the offense seems to be producing, but he sadly is not. And so to have him, you know, be the head of a starting rotation, I think is just, you know, maybe a sign that Seattle's really not ready to take that next step. And, you know, hopefully he can turn things around, but the way things look right now, it looks like, you know, his status as being an ace is being called into conversation.
Age certainly gets them all. I know Adam Wainwright with the Cardinals struggling a little bit this season as well, especially lately. And then we saw not a pitcher, but Alex Rodriguez, who's having an awful year and sort of reached an agreement with the Yankees to stay with them while retiring. Kind of an odd deal, though, for Rodriguez, where he'll play Friday and then that'll be the end of it. Did you? What did you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised because I thought that he had some, you know, some hard feelings with as far as how he was treated in New York. And I know that would have been, you know, similar anywhere he would have gone. Say he would have gone to Houston, you know, after he left Texas. you know, they would have, the fans would have turned on him there too. But, you know, New York's the biggest, you know, media market on the planet. And I think that he really felt as though he was being unfairly judged and criticized when he was, you know, far from the only person who was juicing or found to have been juicing. So I was surprised that he was willing to kind of stick around and stay in that situation. Everything I've heard this season has been that he has been a terrific teammate there for all of his, you know, his teammates and encouraging and, you know, helping to teach the younger generation. So, you know, I'm not surprised that he's sticking around in coaching, but yeah, I'm just a little surprised that he would stay in New York, where really, you know, he kind of got the short end of the stick, I think, from the media in a lot of ways for a number of years. But, you know, I guess if him and Brian Cashman's relationship is that close, or he feels, you know, a personal connection to those younger guys on the team and wants to see them, you know, improve their games, then, you know, there's probably worse ways to make money post, you know, post-career. But, you know, he'll be sticking in New York for the time being. And as far as I'm concerned, he's probably one of the best position players to ever play the game. And, you know, I think that's something that he can, you know, rest easy knowing.
And on to pro football, I know we didn't get to see our first game because they used the wrong paint on the field for the Hall of Fame game. But you wrote about Fantasy Football 2016. And nowadays I know so many people that play fantasy football, always looking for information. And you have a tidbit here on four players who will vastly improve on dismal 2015 seasons. One of those, a big disappointment for my team last year, C.J. Anderson of the Denver Broncos. You also mentioned Torrey Smith of San Francisco, Chris Conley of Kansas City, and Clive Walford of the Oakland Raiders. And give some backup there without blowing everything out of the water. These are players you believe might be able to help some folks.
Well, I think Anderson really underwhelmed for everybody last year. And you know, his numbers really did not, you know, speak too fondly of, you know, a successful season. He kind of regressed in yards, carries, and touchdowns, which, you know, is never a great sign, especially when you're playing in, you know, 15 games. So he wasn't, you know, out with, you know, any serious injury. That being said, you know, Peyton Manning's gone. I think we saw Denver rely pretty heavily on, you know, that rushing attack when he wasn't behind or under center. And, you know, I think we can expect to see more of that, because I just don't see, you know, Mark Sanchez or, you know, anybody in Denver, you know, kind of leading them to the promised land on their arm, or on the merit of their arm. So I think that he's going to get a lot more touches. You know, they were pretty quick to give him the ball in the red zone last season. So I think that's a sign that they trust him. And, you know, all accounts have been that he's healthy, which is, you know, obviously the most important thing. And, you know, furthermore, Denver's offensive line improved, you know, throughout the offseason. So I think that'll help his chances. It'll give him more avenues to work with, hopefully a little bit better blocking. And you know, maybe he can have a bounce back year. Torrey Smith, I think, is going to be huge in San Francisco. I think Chip Kelly's been kind of yearning for a speedster, you know, ever since the days of DeSean Jackson. So I think that he's really going to put Smith to use in San Francisco. He doesn't really have, you know, great quarterbacks at his disposal, but, you know, Smith is a burner who really kind of, you know, catches mostly everything that's thrown his way, which, you know, would seem like an obvious, you know, thing to have going for you as a wide receiver if you're trying to be successful. But Smith has been really, you know, consistently healthy and consistently reliable. And I think, you know, Kelly's really going to put him to use. Chris Conley, I honestly thought was going to be huge last year, but did borderline nothing. You know, he only caught one touchdown pass. That being said, you know, I cite some metrics where he, you know, had one of the highest catch rates of any receiver to see between 10 to 49 targets from a season ago. And, you know, catch rate's usually a good sign. I think we saw a little bit more of Alex Smith, you know, finally throwing to his wide receivers last season, you know, after essentially that whole year where he just, you know, would hit Travis Kelce and then, you know, maybe Jamal Charles, but would never kind of test his receivers in the end zone. So I think Conley will see, you know, some more looks this year. Clive Walford, I'm kind of all in on Oakland, honestly. I think Oakland's going to be one of the dark horse picks to make the postseason this year. You know, they return all of their weapons on offense. Carr, you know, improved tremendously. Walford, they're kind of slowly developing into a pass-catching tight end. You know, he's a terrific blocker. But I think that they're going to give him some looks in the end zone, and hopefully, you know, Amari Cooper will draw some attention. Crabtree might draw some attention away from him to give him some more looks. But Oakland, I think, is going to be a really fun team to watch this year, and I think Walford's going to be a big part of that.
All right, we'll post the links, of course, to all the articles in. I know you start making people. I don't really mean money, but start making their teams better. You'll be a guru. You get a billion hits a week, Josh, on your fantasy football.
No, you know, that's the hope. I hope that someone can take something from it. You know, I personally have not been overwhelmingly successful, so I would take my my projections with a grain of salt. But I did do some number crunching, and you know, this is what the data showed me. These aren't I have no personal biases as far as any of these players are concerned.
All right, Josh, I appreciate the visit as usual and look forward to chatting with you next week, okay?
Sounds great. Thanks for having me.
That is Josh Planos. Josh, thanks again. I'll chat with you Tuesday, okay?
Okay. All right. Have a great week.
Thanks. Bye-bye.